Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. Today in our virtual studio, I've got Willem Kitsoff. Willem, it's great to have you in our studio. I know we've been speaking for a while. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for the opportunity. I currently serve as the CEO of D6 Group, obviously why we're having this discussion primarily, but a family of two boys, married to Mia, 39 years old, lives in Stellenbosch, love the outdoors. That's my happy place. I suppose I'm currently living in the Western Cape, but my true love is the bushveld. So that's where I find peace and happiness. And yeah, I've got a passion for education and changing the world at scale. I think it's a bit of a pipe dream and almost sounds as if one is trying to solve world peace. But our ambition and my life's ambition is to make an impact in everything that we do and ensuring that in what we do that there's no losers and only winners.
That's fantastic. So, well, Willem, we'll probably dial back into the lovely town of Stellenbosch somewhere in the conversation. It's one of my favorite places in South Africa, but definitely very keen to hear more about your perspectives, very keen to hear about this organization that you've grown and developed and some of the exciting plans that you guys have got ahead. So thank you for making time for our conversation and thank you for being part of the story of Hidden Growth Champions, where we try to showcase organizations exactly like that. And Willem, I'm going to start by taking you back right at the beginning. When I interview entrepreneurs, investors, people who've become involved in, particularly in purpose-driven organizations, there's very often a commonality to their story around what we've come to term the origin story, how this started. And it very often it's personal. It involves, you know, solving a real problem or spotting a real meaningful opportunity. It's more than just, I just kind of ended up here. There's real meaning to that story. And I'd love to hear your origin story. How did you decide to enroll yourself and then others in this thing that became D6?
Thanks, Sark. So maybe just a caveat on my involvement in D6. I became involved in D6 in 2016. The company's actually started way before then. D6, as it stands today, is a consolidation of two entities. One is D6 Technologies that was primarily focused on solving or providing schools with a comprehensive communication platform to ensure that schools can better communicate to their parents. That started off in 2009 by a group of individuals that realized that it was actually driven by parents realizing the frustration that communication from their community or their schools was not great. And they tried to solve it through developing the D6 communicator application. The other company that is now part of D6 Group is a company called Principal Software, which is a company that started in 2006 already by someone who was serving on the governing body of a school and had a frustration with the fact that none of the school management software that was being utilized, whether it's financial, admin, curriculum, communication, none of these platforms were integrated. And there were data duplication. It was always a challenge to ensure that data is accurately carried across the different platforms. And he started to develop an integrated platform with the intent of solving the anomalies between these different platforms being utilized or standalone platforms being utilized in schools. From a family perspective, we invested in both of these companies during, let's say, 2012-ish. Then they're about 2012, 2013. And we only consolidated the two companies in mid-2017. My involvement was slightly before that on the school management side, the principal software company. But one of the core things that we implemented when we did the consolidation is we ensured that we had a very good plan in terms of what we had to execute once we do the consolidation. One thing we realized when we acquired the companies back in 2012, it was a bit of a hope, a dream that one will buy two companies and the management teams of these two companies would work together without a real plan, which never really came to fruition. So when we did the consolidation, we had to be sure that they talk about what's your 90-day plan after execution. And when we did the consolidation mid-2017, I had to make sure that you know exactly what you want to execute when you do the deal, so that there's little room for deviation in terms of what your plan is. And then from mid-2017, we started D6 Group as it stands today, whereby we've got a core focus on improving the way schools operate. We do have a bit of a certain clients outside the school space, and specifically referring to some churches and clubs also utilizing some of our software. But our core focus remains to solving inefficiencies within the school's administrative and managerial environment. And that's where we believe it's, although we understand that within the school space, there's a lot of challenges and a lot of areas that can be improved. And this is a bit of a generalization, but our view is that a school as an organization is more complex than a lot of the SMMEs in our country and I think in the world. Yet very few people have a strong focus on the managerial aspects of the school. We do see a lot of effort going into what's happening between the teacher and the learner. And yes, that is a vital part of this organization being effective. But in any business, management and access to information and management systems and the efficiencies are a primary focus, where we believe in the school's environment, that's not necessarily the same. It's the managerial aspects are considered a hygiene factor. And that's exactly what we're trying to improve.
Willem, let's go there for a moment, because, you know, as an individual, my interactions with your products and services has very much been, you know, like many others as a parent. I was asked to download the app. I was told that it would provide me up-to-date information. It would connect me with the school better. And having two kids that have gone through schools that have used the application, you see the front end. You see an important element of this chain, the link between the school and the parent, so the importance of keeping both parties up to date. But from everything you're describing, much more happens behind the scenes. There are many other parts of this chain which are equally important and that would have a significant impact on that relationship, on that trust relationship between the parent and the school. And that goes into the way the school gets run, the kind of decision that gets made, the downstream implications of all of these, both for the students, for the kids, as well as for the parents. So maybe talk to us a little bit about what makes the school environment more complex. Why is it that environment became such a fertile ground for a management solution as you guys managed to develop?
So in our experience within the school's environment, schools are to some extent resistant to change. From a technology adoption view, especially on the managerial side, there sometimes could be a view of if it works, don't change it. And although that's not always wrong, it does lead to some form of complacency. The complexity within the school space in art from a business perspective, we refer to a B2B2C model. So we service the school as a business-to-business offering, where we sell our software or school management and systems to the school itself. But the end user, who is the parent, their experience is dependent on the effective utilization of this middle B. So although we are dependent on the middle B to utilize the product properly, the actual perception in the market is also largely driven by the perception that the consumer has of the product. So our parents, in terms of their perception of the application. One of our core challenges is how do we ensure that the middle B operates effectively and use it properly so that the end consumer has a good experience on the product. In terms of the complexities within the school space, just to paint a bit of a picture of a school, how we see it, and then one can compare this with SMMEs or companies in general. So a school is an organization where, if we take an average of all the schools we service approximately 2,500 schools. On average, these schools have approximately 50 to 60 staff members that needs to be managed. It's got a terrain management. Obviously, a school is a physical property also, which means that there's a large portion of terrain and property management that needs to be done. In terms of the product that needs to be delivered. Now, if we take a focus on the South African market, but it's applicable internationally, it's normally a curriculum which consists of a large number of subjects, learner outcomes, assessment level stuff. So the complication and the or the complexities and the vastness of the products that you need to provide. It is a very complex product because it's both service related in terms of providing classes or providing tuition, but then there's also a product element attached to it because each subject and each learner outcome and each assessment level element has a small product attached to it, whether it's a test or a project that needs to be done. And that is the scope of the product that needs to be delivered. So it's almost as if you've got this warehouse of 1,000 products that you need to offer. And then probably the most complex environment is your clientele. I doubt whether there's any clientele which is more emotional than a parent and their child. So this entire environment has to operate effectively. And we expect that from a school management perspective, a lot of the school management elements or people that's involved in school management has come through the ranks of the education space and not necessarily been recruited specifically for managerial positions. And that doesn't necessarily mean there's nothing wrong with that, but it does have a risk that managerial efficiencies and understanding is not always necessarily the core focus within the school's environment. And in our view, if a business, we always have the saying of an average product with a great management team can be a great success. But an average or a good product with not necessarily the right experience from a managerial perspective, you will most likely not be successful, or the product and service could be mediocre. And that's our view on it. We have to we have to support and improve management because everything will flow from there.
100%. You know, Willem, you just kind of triggered a thought when you spoke about that combination, that hybrid between products and services within the school environment. Kind of takes me back to one of my favorite kind of authors or management thinkers, a guy by the name of Dave Gray. Dave was one of the founders of Explain, a design services firm, one of the most successful around the world. In fact, we do quite a bit of work with them. They're one of our international partners. And Dave speaks a lot in his most famous book, The Connected Company. He speaks a lot about products being a service. He calls them a service avatar. A product is simply a link in the chain. It is simply an enabler to the service experience, but you've got to focus on the service experience. And if you understand what that service experience is, and if you understand where trust gets built or destroyed within that myriad of various product proof points, and not mistake the product for the overall service experience, those is what makes those connected companies so successful. So it just kind of triggered that thought as you were describing the complexity of the school environment.
Yeah, I suppose software as a service companies or companies providing ERP platforms in general have similar challenges in ensuring that their end users utilize the product properly. Because when you provide administrative or management platforms or any ERP related platforms, CRM platforms, your customer experience from a business to business perspective will be the school, in our view, in our case, the school's administrative staff or the financial staff or the teachers. But the end user, which is in any company also utilizing any CRM platform, will be their clientele. So it's quite a complex environment to try and manage, because the customer experience, the trust, the satisfaction that is built from a customer perspective is not only the business to business offering, but you as a provider of the software need to keep the end user or the consumer or customer at the end of the day also in mind when developing your software, because the middle B or the business that you're providing the software is dependent on your platforms to, again, allow their customers to have a good experience and to have trust and, you know, just a customer experience perspective.
Now, Willem, as you were describing this in the earlier years, and even till today, one of the trickiest or the most critical part of growing an organization such as this is to make sure that, you know, our decisions, you know, there's some critical decisions to be made here. For example, I know that your organization decided not to offer, you know, the content, the textbooks to the school environment. That was an area you decided not to play in. You focused on the management of the school functions. You've focused on the communication between parents and the school. You know, you focused on creating that sense of community. And as the school kind of branches out into tours and out of school activities, that has grown in turn. So talk to us a little bit about what were the most critical decisions that you and your team have made that has made the organization such a success?
I would say the first thing that comes to mind is purpose. Purpose or plan and purpose. So something that we or myself from a CEO perspective is driving very hard is to ensure that there's alignment in terms of why do we do what we do. Not necessarily our perspective is profitability is an outcome of purpose. That is not the purpose itself. And what we've seen is that there's an Afrikaans saying, met herhalen kom vastlegging, which is if you repeat something for long enough, it becomes habit or it becomes part of you. And when we did the consolidation, there were obviously different cultures and different values that we had to consolidate and combine into one business. And the constant repetition of the values and why we are doing what we're doing has resulted in a company where I believe that most of our employees are working at D6. Obviously, they earn salaries and there's financial reward, but it's for the purpose of solving or improving the way that our communities operate. So they've got an ambition and love towards what we're trying to achieve first and foremost before one talks about profitability and how big your salary is. And that was probably the most important thing and still is the most important thing. I can clearly see a detachment of staff members when I do not drive the why and our plan and ambitions on a frequent basis. And then I can clearly see that there's a detachment or a almost like a lukewarmness in terms of excitement in the company. But when that ambition and the why is driven constantly and from top, it's a top-down approach. I mean, if management and if your CEO and if even the board and shareholders for that matter does not buy into the why before they buy into the profitability, then it's a bit of a slippery slope. Obviously, one of the frustrating things that I've seen in industry is that people sometimes hide behind a bona fide intent for a lack of profitability. So one would say, because we're doing good, it's okay if we don't make that much money, which I don't believe in. I do believe that if you've got a bona fide intent and you do provide something which is solving a problem, the profitability should be a core driver to ensure sustainability and to drive excitement. We embarking now on hopeful international expansion in the company. And I can see that there's a massive excitement internally, not because it's a pipe dream, but it's because we're doing something more. We're doing more of the same. There's a focus. There's an understanding of what problem we're solving. There's an understanding of how we should do it. So the uncertainty of a plan coming to fruition becomes less because everyone is bought into it and everyone understands it, or there's strong focus in terms of what we're trying to achieve and everyone's bought into that.
Willem, when you talk about that sense of excitement, talk to me a little bit about how do you get other participants in this ecosystem to be as excited? How do you, for example, get the parents to be excited? How do you get partners? I know, for example, more recently, you've started to become involved in the payment space and providing essentially the beginnings of a financial service to the parents and to the students through obviously through the parent community. How do you, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that, but how do you first get the excitement and the involvement of people who are not your staff, with people who you don't have, you know, the opportunity of meeting every morning for a talk that you have to enlist while they have their own priorities and their own organizations to run?
That is probably an area where I do believe we've got a lot of improvement still to be done. I believe that clients link to a brand, not necessarily because of their not only because of their product. We always talk about the Red Bull example. I mean, Red Bull as a company, they very seldom talk about the Red Bull drink. If we see everything that Red Bull does, the attachment to the Red Bull brand is something that is, it creates excitement, irrespective of the product that you actually buy. And that's something which we have a lot of work to do to ensure that what we stand for as a brand, that our customers are attached to that brand and proud to be associated with that brand, irrespective of the type of products that they utilize. In our environment, we have a quite a broad product range. If we look at the entire managerial aspects, I mean, it's administration, finance, curriculum, communication, the whole cashless drive. So there's a very big product base, and the type of clients that you have is also, it's parents, it's schools, admin staff, finance staff, it's people dealing with communication. There's external stakeholders that's involved. So from a product perspective, you cannot rely that a client would be excited about the company just based on the product. They must be linked to the brand and excited about the brand as primary. The one thing though, that said, is we have a lot of schools where we've implemented an initiative where schools can earn rewards based on the utilization of the product. So our dream is that our software should become free, because schools earn a reward. If the better they utilize it, the more their rewards are. And we do that through sharing some of the advertising revenue we generate on our applications back to the organization. So just quickly, we've got about anything between 800,000 to 1.2 million parents utilizing the app to receive communication. And it's a rich advertising environment. And we commercialize that space through advertising. And then we share back a portion back to the school. And when engaging with some schools on the sharing back initiative, sometimes the feedback is, I don't really care about sharing back anything. Just give me a good product and I'm happy. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it's the spin-off of that is ensuring that you granularize your product offering to such an extent that you have the ability to allocate product owners and people accountable for that specific product line to the product. Because in our environment, obviously the school, we can't assume the school as a client is a client. There's underlying nuances and different types of people that we need to deal with. So the financial staff might be completely different to the administrative staff and is definitely completely different to a parent. And each of those end users must be managed by a specific product that solves the solution for those specific end users. And the product owners must ensure that they only focus on that. In the past, we had one product owner looking over the entire product, and we've started granularizing that. I know I read some, I think it was that movie on Social Dilemma where Facebook had a product owner for the like button. And I was like, man alive, that's proper granularization of your product. So I think we still have a way to go in terms of further granularizing our product ownership. But it's ensuring that someone takes ownership of a small part of the larger solution and only focus on that. Because as soon as you start trying to solve world peace, you're so diluted that you're not really effective in anything.
No, 100%. I really like that mention you've made earlier to purpose and plan. And it sums it up really, really nicely together. Willem, talk to me a little bit about your international expansion. This has been in the works for a while, and obviously had a nice runway in your local market before you've made the decision to branch off internationally. Although you do have, you have had some presence in schools outside of your home market, so you've been growing that for a number of years now. What's changed? What conditions signal to you that this is the right time? Talk to me a little bit about the why behind this.
So I've always known that the offering that we provide had international legs, or let's call it scalability. There was always a scalability factor within what we do. We always had the ambition of not being only South African based, but building an international company. I knew though that there's always, from a business perspective, the risk of growing too fast. And that's not necessarily a capital related thing. It's in my view, growing too fast is you start to onboard too many different types of clients or regions or complexities within the client that you're trying to serve that your service offering becomes dilapidated, and then it becomes a bit of a snowball effect that you, as soon as you start taking on too much, you lose trust in the market. Now, from a D6 perspective, we always had a theme within the company of stabilize and perfect. So when we did the consolidation back in 2017, we've implemented stabilization and perfection as a theme to ensure that we stop focusing on too many things, but rather stabilize our current environment and ensure we build scalability. And I believe that we are currently at a position where we have built enough operational efficiency or scalability within our processes. We understand our market both nationally and internationally. Just out of interest, our international expansion previously was more on an ad hoc as and when it happened basis, where expats would leave South Africa and go to other countries and tell the schools there that they weren't using this product, and then they'll get in contact and we'll onboard them. But it was never a proactive approach from our perspective. But I suppose in hindsight, blessing in disguise was that we did gain exposure of the international schools environment, and we did realize that it's an 80-20 principle. Schools in other countries operate fairly similar to schools in South Africa. We've seen schools in our neighboring countries of Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique. We've seen schools in Kenya. We've seen schools in UAE, in Europe, some schools. So we've seen quite a vast range of schools, and their challenges and the way that they operate are very similar. So what we've implemented from a foundation perspective is first our purpose and why we're doing what we're doing, so that everyone's bought into that. Secondly, creating the excitement of, okay, given that we know what we want to achieve, how broad can we do this? And then ensuring that we build the operational efficiency that when we pull the trigger, we know that things won't break. And I'm quite comfortable from an operational perspective. Yes, there's unknowns. Obviously, exploring the international space, there will definitely be challenges. But we have seen, as mentioned, we have seen the schools operating internationally. We do quite a thorough due diligence on any country that we are planning on moving into before we actually approach it. And we're excited about applying a cookie cutter approach to a large extent within the different countries that we are moving into, with the understanding that the countries that we do select from an international expansion, that we've done our homework to ensure that there's a good product fit, and that there's economic stability, not political unrest. I mean, there's a couple of things that we go through to ensure that before we enter that country that we've ticked the boxes, but then that we apply our model that we've seen working in South Africa and several other countries, and just do more of the same. And I suppose that's where the important thing is determine exactly what your core reason for existence is and what you want to solve. What is the problem that you want to solve? Then make sure that you build sufficient scalability and operational efficiency in order to be able to solve that problem, both from a operational perspective, but also product, and then scale. And we're in that position now where we've got the product, we've got the operational scalability, and I believe we are ready for our next chapter in terms of international scalability.
Now, very often in as organizations step beyond their core markets, there's very often kind of two schools of thoughts there. The one is, you know, you have to maintain focus. You've got to be very specific about which markets, which product, what's the value proposition. Stay close to the core, being able to demonstrate that in new markets, and yes, with the nuances that brings, but be very specific. In recent years, we've seen an alternative, particularly fueled through software as a service as the business model, where more markets become open at the same time, where you know, go-to-market approaches are not specific to one market, but they include, you know, a plethora of markets that may be similar in certain respects, and where a lot of the operations, a lot of the support happens outside of the target market. And obviously, there's a lot of space in between. There's a lot of hybrids in between. When you were planning your international expansion, was it, I'm just curious, was it driven by specific markets and their developments? Or did you see this as, we've developed really a core capability here that we could apply in quite a few markets? We'll be very disciplined in how we apply it and the speed at which we we execute and not, you know, not going too quickly and losing that stability that you're able to develop. I'm just curious, and on that kind of continuum, where do you find yourself in the way you're venturing into international markets?
I suppose what I mentioned earlier in terms of blessing in disguise and us having sight on the type of schools that we believe is a fit for our product. It was a case of knowing that the offering that we've got is applicable to the majority of the schools that we've engaged with internationally. And as you've mentioned, from a software as a service perspective, growing internationally from a SaaS perspective is, especially if you don't operate in an environment where regulatory control is a major burden, then your ability to expand internationally becomes easier, because the clients that will adopt your product, you must be certain that you have a defined scope of what you are and what you are not, so that when clients procure your product, that you should be in a position to say, sorry, this is not going to work for you, as opposed to allowing everyone to onboard and then sitting with a bit of a circus or a colorful chart with a whole bunch of different nuances that you need to manage. And that's why we, from a business perspective, we're starting actually to downscale certain product stacks. Over the last 10 years, it was trying to build as much features in the product as possible, because we were of the view that if you just add this one thing, you'll open up an additional market. And it became a bit of a very heavy product with a significant amount of features, but the clients actually only need, or they utilize 10% of it. So it's again going back to the basics of what are the core things that that is a problem that you need to solve, and be wary of just adding, be wary of chasing features. Stick to your guns in terms of what you're trying to solve, and do that to the best of your ability. And as mentioned, then being able to scale internationally. And we've seen this with a lot of software provisions or software companies, where when it's a service related, software as a service, obviously service related thing, but if it's a service related play, consultancy or something that is a very regulatory or regulated space, international expansion, in my view, is a risky endeavor. And we've obviously seen a lot of companies that where it did not work. But from a software perspective, if you know your client well, and you know what your product can and cannot do, then the international expansion is an exciting venture. I would, from a D6 perspective, although we've got the ambition in the future to serve broader communities and not only schools, I would be hesitant to increase our scope of type of clients that we service, because a church or a club or any other organization will have its own challenges. Our core focus will remain schools and only servicing or solving the problems within schools, because that is where we believe our core competency lies. And that's also where we believe the school, to a large extent, is also the center of the community. If we can support schools to be more effective, we believe that that community as a whole could be uplifted. We've seen this in South Africa, where if the school starts to deteriorate and decrease in quality service, that entire community feels as if they get disengaged, especially non or rural communities. If the schools start to not operate as effectively or providing good service, parents start to disengage and send their children elsewhere. And that it has a significant effect on the community itself. So if we can support those schools, we believe we can support communities also to flourish. I know it's a bit of a, suppose it's a more of a pipe dream or a fluffy ambition, but we do think schools are central to community efficiency.
Yeah, well, it sounds like everything I'm hearing, that behind that purpose, at some point there will be a plan.
Yeah, definitely.
My last question, Willem, if I kind of take a step back, this is an exciting, this kind of COVID recovery period, if I could call it that, is an exciting period on the one hand, and it's a scary period for many people on the other, and particularly for parents, as we think about the future of education, as we think about what are the kind of roles, professions, possibilities there are for our kids, where we had more certainty, we had a longer runway to kind of project into or forecast into or step into. And in today's environment, that is increasingly difficult. Are you optimistic about the kind of the future of education, the role that education would play as an industry over the next, 10, 15, perhaps even 20 years, as we settle into this post-COVID era, as we settle into a new normal? I know we're still trying to figure out many elements of this. Are you worried that this period will be risky, dangerous for educational institutions? I guess I'm asking this as a parent to two kids who are in their late teens and early 20s who are kind of very much stepping into that realm, particularly of higher education, as they're starting to focus about, where do I want to apply my talents? What would be your perspective, particularly if you had to speak to those young individuals and the parents that stand behind them?
So I'm actually, it's a discussion I've had numerous times with people regarding what was the effect of COVID on schools. So, which is obviously the space we operate in. I think that the current landscape and the challenges that COVID as a pandemic brought to schools specifically and to the parents' perception of schools, my view is it'll be more positive than negative. My previous involvement before I joined D6 was with a company that provided homeschooling for learners, which could be perceived by some as a strange offering, but through that we realized the importance of schools not necessarily only acting as an organization that is responsible for learning, but rather an organization that is primarily responsible for ensuring that someone looks after the kids, and secondly to learn. Because learning is something which can happen at night, it can happen at any stage during the day, and it doesn't necessarily have to be facilitated by a teacher. It could be, you can Google stuff online these days and learn. So learners will not be dependent on schools for learning, but parents, in our view, will always have the responsibility to go to work. Things have changed over the last 50 years where we're currently the majority of both parents work. And we've all seen now during COVID trying to work from home and looking after the kids is almost it's almost impossible. I've had that experience personally. So I realized that the importance of enabling or being able to send my learners or kids to somewhere that they are being looked after is the most important thing for me. It's an added benefit that they can do learning also. So I think from a school perspective, my view personally, I do not think that schools in terms of their structure is going to change significantly, because parents are dependent on being able to send their learners somewhere where they could be looked after. In terms of exactly how learning is going to happen, I think we're entering an exciting space, or has always been entering an exciting space of that changing for the good, not for the bad. I do believe that schools will become facilitators of the learning process. Teachers will not remain the primary holders of information and knowledge, but teachers will move into a position of facilitating learning as opposed to teaching. And that learning is something which will not only happen between 8 and 12 or 1 when you're at school, but will be a continuous thing, which is probably a good habit for us to get into in any case. So yeah, I'm excited. And from a D6 perspective, the managerial aspects of these organizations, irrespective of their primary intent, whether it's learning or caregiving or looking after, we've got a stable client base that I believe will continue and will not be jeopardized by the move to online within the world. So I hope that gives some insights into my perception of our environment or the education environment.
Very much. Willem, thank you for a great conversation, for the many insights and giving us a glimpse into your organizations. We wish you all the very best in this current wave of your international expansion as you step into the new. And thanks again for making time to meet with us and have this discussion on Hidden Growth Champions.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Hidden Growth.
Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.